Hello, everyone, and welcome to another classic edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with my co-host and our physician in residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And Meg, I don't know if you know this, but I am not exactly your typical sports fan. My friends know this and tease me, and my dad does all the time. I don't follow traditional sports like basketball and baseball, football. So for me to say that I am really excited about today's program when it relates to football means this really must be a great broadcast.
You know, I did know that about you, Ryan, and I'm kind of right there with you. As you know, recently the NFL hired me to come in and talk with some of their players about parenting. And in fact, in my new book, Strong Mothers, Strong Sons, I had a few interviews with professional football players about what their moms meant to them. But before I met these really famous players, I had no idea who they were.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And I was talking with our broadcast team here at Family Talk, and I mentioned a few of their names, and right away our producers knew who I was talking about. So like you said, for me to be really excited about today's program is saying a lot, and I hope that all of our listeners will stay tuned for this very special program.
Well, our guest today is a football coaching legend. His name is Gene Stallings, and he coached at the University of Alabama and Texas A&M University. He was also on the coaching staff for the Dallas Cowboys and the St. Louis Cardinals before the team moved to Arizona. But more pertinent to today's broadcast, Coach Stallings was also the father of the late Johnny Stallings, who you're going to hear a lot about today.
Well, Ryan, I don't think we should take any more away from this broadcast, so let's go ahead and join your dad as he begins the conversation with Gene Stallings on this classic edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Coach, I'm going to ask you to start. You now have a 36-year-old son who has Down syndrome.
Right.
Tell us about his arrival and how you were told of his special problem.
Well, now to review the bidding, I was a young coach at the University of Alabama working for Coach Bryant. Had two lovely daughters, what I thought was the absolute best job in the world. Had gone to Texas A&M, and now we're expecting our third child. Had two girls, wanted a little boy, obviously, Ruth Ann went through the labor, and they told us that it was a little boy. We were obviously excited and made phone calls and so forth. Well, and anyway, the next morning, we went to the hospital, and Ruth Ann said, "Everybody's got their babies with the exception of mine. You know, they do it a little differently then than they do now." And so anyway, I went out and I saw the doctor in the hall, and I said, "Dr. So-and-so, everybody has their babies with the exception of Ruth Ann. Is there anything wrong?" And he said, "Yes," said, "you know, we think that baby is mongoloid. You know, we don't even use that word." Mm-hmm. And when he said that, I drew back to hit him. I don't know why, but just the impulse was to draw back and hit him. And when I did, I passed out.
Did you really?
Yeah, I'd often wished that the good Lord would just let me hung on a little longer, and I would have tried to teach him some bedside manners. I don't know whether I would have or not.
He said it with no more compassion than that.
Right, and just about the way I said that. And then I wake up, and there's some nurses giving me some smelling sauce. And so then I wanted to go in. And, you know, in those days, we're talking about 30-some-odd years ago, you know, they would suggest institutions that here you are with a good job, two young daughters, this particular son will cause some embarrassment to the household, and you know, if you put him in an institution, you'll visit with him for a while, and then the visits will be less and less frequent, and it may even come to the point that you'll sort of forget maybe that you have him.
Coach, did they really say that?
Well, that was sort of what they did in those days. That was never an option for us. You know, we didn't know anything about Down syndrome at all. Had two young girls. I can remember Ruth Ann saying, "You know, I'll never be happy again. You know, I'm going to do the best I can to raise little Johnny, but I just don't ever think that I'll be happy." Well, I kept thinking that the doctors were wrong. I said, "You know, Ruthie, doctors make mistakes." I said, "Look here, this child's fine. He's going to be all right. There's nothing wrong with being wrong. He's just wrong." But after a while, you know, we realized that he wasn't. We made the determination that when we went out, we were going to take Johnny. If he made a mess, he just made a mess. He was going to be a. We were going to raise him best we could. We didn't
you
know.
You never
about
considered institutionalizing.
Oh no, no, yeah. That was. In fact, I was somewhat embarrassed about even the suggestion. But that's sort of what they did.
If I can interrupt you, that is true. I worked at that time as part of my own training in the doctoral program in a hospital where 3,000 mentally retarded patients were, and many of them were Down syndrome who could function very well in a family, and yet right. They had been taken out there and essentially dumped, as you said, and they never came back.
Right.
And it broke my heart to see those youngsters because many Downs people are the most loving folks on the face of the earth, and your son is one of them.
Right. And, the thing that we thought was the absolute worst thing that could possibly happen, the good Lord knows what he's doing. It turns out to be the absolute joy of our life. You just can't imagine how much we love little Johnny. I'll just say this briefly, but we played the last game of my coaching career was against Michigan in a bowl game. And we'd won the game. It was hot, and they had about 10, 11 buses lined up. And I said, hey, how come the bus is not leaving? And he said, well, do you really want to know? And I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. Let's go to the hotel. They said, well, we're holding up the buses because Johnny's signing autographs. There must have been 100 people in line getting his autograph. And, he would write it, John. He would, and he's held jobs, and he worked at the Paul Bryant Museum.
There are a lot of people down there that love him.
He's very popular now.
Coach, you and Ruth Ann have a strong faith. Did that help you at this time?
Well, I never doubted. Never got mad at God. That was never an option. I was just dealt a different hand, and what we were trying to do was figure out how to play the cards. One thing that I do mention to a lot of families is that they need to get involved with some kind of church. Church people just care differently.
Yeah.
I know that when little Johnny would go to the children at church would play with him, the teachers would want him in their classes. I never saw anybody that was the least bit abusive to him as a result of that. He loves to go to church. He there's no such thing as missing.
Coach, you have witnessed to far more people than you could even imagine in your love for your son. You've had him sitting in the press box with you and down on the field with
right.
you, and people see you with him. He follows you around.
Right.
The love that you have showed to that boy is incredible.
Well, it's not easy, but we don't even know what unconditional love is until we observe these children.
Yes.
I've heard little Johnny say so many times, so the reason he wants Alabama to win, it makes Pop happy. it makes Pop happy. And never keep score. It's just been the glue that's held our family together. How many of your listening audience has a 36-year-old son that tells him every day that he loves him? Johnny tells me that every day. You tell me that's not worth something. And he'll say, who my favorite pop is in the whole world? And I'll say, says this every day. And I say, who, Johnny? He said, you are. He says that every day. And something else that's very comforting to all of us is, they've got a one-way ticket to heaven. Yeah. Boy, what a great feeling that is to know that one of these days I'm going to be wanting to change place with old Johnny. I'm going to say, he got a good deal. When you really think about it, he's got four sisters that love him dearly. He's got a one-way ticket to heaven, loves God, he's got a good deal.
We've been listening to the deep love that Coach Gene Stallings had for his son, Johnny. What an incredible dad. Johnny went home to be with the Lord in August of 2008. My dad spoke with Coach Stallings about his precious memories of his son just a few weeks after his passing. And we'd like to let you hear that now on this Family Talk broadcast.
Coach, I'm sure you and your wife, Ruth Ann, are still grieving over the passing of this marvelous young man, Johnny.
Dr. Dobson, we are. My heart's heavy. And, selfishly, I know that if he had his choice, he wouldn't come back. He's in heaven. There's no question about that. And that's, you know, if we could just have one wish for our children, we would wish that they would spend eternity in heaven.
That's right.
But I heard from me. I mean, when you think of a youngster that was 46 years old, did not know one bad word. Every Saturday night, he would get his Bible out and he would put his dollar in it because he wanted to be ready on Sunday. Saw the best in everybody. He was just a joy. He was an absolute joy. I'm not sure he wasn't an angel. I mean, he loved people, saw the best in them, never forgot a name. Here is a youngster that literally couldn't count to 10. But as long as they play football at the University of Alabama, the equipment room will be named the John Mark Stallings Equipment Room. Abilene Christian University, a few years ago, picked four people that they felt like had literally changed the world. Johnny was one of those four.
He was very serious about his love for Jesus Christ, wasn't he?
No question. I mean, he loved to go to church Sunday night, Wednesday night. He helped teach a little class. In fact, one of the pictures that I've got that I just love shows him saying a little prayer in his Sunday school class with his little oxygen thing. One of the last pictures that I've got of him. He loved God. There's no question about that.
I read that Johnny died of congestive heart failure. That's a very common problem for those with Down syndrome. Describe the last days of his life.
Well, it's sort of hard. I don't think that I'll ever complain again, Dr. Dobson. This is what happened. This is Friday night. His oxygen saturation had been low for a long time. I don't know if you know anything about oxygen saturation, but everybody's in the 90s. When it drops below 90, 88, 87, alarms go off and they're ready to send you to ICU because you're really, really sick. I'm in bed with him, sort of talking to him, and I checked his oxygen saturation, and it was like 52.
Oh, my.
And I said, Johnny, how you feeling? And he said, I'm fine.
Yeah.
He wasn't fine. I mean, he had practically no oxygen at all, and yet he didn't complain about anything. Something told me about 6 o'clock that I need to go check on him. I go in, and he's having a hard time breathing. And he sort of, it's just sort of hard for me to say, but he was sort of hugging on me, and he said, Pops, help me, help me. It wasn't anything I could do. I really think that he probably just died right then in the bed. Paramedics responded pretty quickly. We live out on the ranch. They started immediately trying to get his heart back to beating, and anyway, got to the hospital in just a little while, and they pronounced him dead around 7:20. I'm not sure that he didn't die at home.
Yeah.
So anyway, August the 2nd was a sad day for me. So, you know, the thing that I thought was the absolute worst thing that ever happened when he was born turned out to be the best thing. My life wouldn't be nearly as rich if it hadn't been for Johnny. And so the people that have these special children, they will bring us more joy than you can imagine.
What a testimony you have made and lived for millions of people around the country in seeing this special son, Johnny, not as handicapped or not as a liability and not as some kind of curse from God, but as a blessing, a blessing that went straight to your heart. Why did everybody love Johnny so much?
No question. And, you know, we have received over 1,300 letters. Now, that's a lot of letters.
You haven't seen anything yet.
They couldn't count to 10. Over 700 memorials to various programs, whether or not it's a youth program at church or various, the RISE program, over 700. The governor of Alabama sent a state trooper car to lead the procession at his funeral. Over 1,100 was at his funeral. The Texas State Highway Department, state troopers, there was five of those cars leading and stopping the traffic. It's hard for me to say, but saluting the hearse as it went by. So he made a difference. There's no question about that.
Mm. That moment must have touched everyone who saw it, everybody who was there. Coach, you mentioned just a minute ago that Johnny never forgot a name. Is that really true?
Just amazing. He might see somebody that he hadn't seen in 20 years. And when he turned 40, we had a big birthday party for him, but didn't know whether he'd have another one or not. People came in from everywhere. He called every person by name. Ruth Ann and I were leaving. We were going somewhere, and we were talking about our neighbors in St. Louis when I was coaching the St. Louis Cardinals and trying to remember the names of the people who lived across the street from us. Well, we were having a hard time. Johnny named every neighbor, named every child of every neighbor, and every dog of every neighbor. You know, he just had a phenomenal memory. I mean, he just didn't forget anything. I'm telling you, if he knew you and he saw you 20 years later, he would call you by name.
That is amazing, and it speaks volumes to me, again, about the tragedy of abortion that's visited on babies in the womb, those who have an anomaly or a disorder or a disease. I'm sure you're aware that there are fewer and fewer individuals with Down syndrome alive today, because when prospective parents learn through amniocentesis that they're carrying a child with Down syndrome, 90% of them are aborted. What does that do to you? I mean, what does it do when you hear a statistic like that?
It just hurts my heart because, first of all, they don't know what they're missing. I mean, sure, it's some struggles and things are not easy, and they don't walk as quickly and talk as plainly. And when Alabama played the game in Tuscaloosa a couple of weeks ago, they had a little short of him there on the big screen. 92,000 gave him a standing ovation. And so these people that do abort these children, I just can't imagine taking the test anyway. You know, sometimes there's just a chromosome deficiency or whatever it is. But I'm telling you, I've said this 1,000 times. If the good Lord would say to me, I'm going to go back 46 years and I'm going to give you a perfectly normal, healthy little boy, or I'm going to give you Johnny, I would take Johnny every time. I mean, I wouldn't hesitate a second about making that decision.
I don't doubt that for a minute, Coach. In fact, I'm having difficulty getting through this interview with you, Coach, because it touches my heart so. And you felt the same way.
And those of us that have these children, why would we even think about wanting to abort one of them? Because you know you're raising a child that eventually is going to be whole and fine and in the presence of God forever. I mean, how can he get any better than that?
Well, and he will have no limitations at all. And
you
have to promise me, Coach, that when we get on the other side, you're going to bring Johnny over and introduce him to me. Would you do that?
That is a done deal.
Hey,
as corny as it sounds, I'm not, you know, dying is not a big deal for me because I know that I will see Johnny. And that sounds silly. But if they came in and told me that I had about 24 hours to live, I wouldn't fret, you know, because I know what's on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Coach, you must be blessed by Governor Sarah Palin coming onto the national scene and, of course, having a baby with Down syndrome and bringing that baby into the world. I wasn't here, but I was told that she came to Colorado Springs for a rally, and there were thousands of people trying to get into the hangar at the Colorado Springs Airport where she spoke. And right down at the front was a family with a teenage boy who had Down syndrome. And that boy was wearing a bright blue T-shirt that carried the words, "Thank you, Sarah." I mean, that really touches me. And another thing that I want to mention to you, I wonder if you watched the Republican National Convention and such an emotional moment when the Palins' little daughter, Piper, was holding their baby that, of course, has Down syndrome.
And she licked her hand.
Yeah, and wet her fingers and smoothed down his hair that was sticking up. I'm telling you that if
you... First of all, I saw that, and then I thought, well, she's seen her mother do that. And what a beautiful memory that is.
Well, I know I'll never forget it. Coach, we're out of time, but I just want to say in closing that you have obviously accomplished so many things in your life, especially on a football field. You won a national championship in 1992, and you had so many wonderful victories. But what I admire most about you goes way beyond football. It's the way you've lived your life, and it's your love for the Lord, and it's your great devotion to your family, and particularly it's your dedication to Johnny. You loved that young man with all your heart, and that's been a tremendous blessing to me and to all of us.
No question. I mean, it's just hard to believe that somebody can love somebody the way that we love Johnny. I mean, what a joy he's been, and what the good Lord gave me, a real blessing in disguise. I didn't know what I was getting.
As a way of closing, Coach, would you say a word or two to the parents out there who also have a special needs child? Some of them are really struggling, and I know that they would appreciate a word of encouragement from you. Would you put your arm around them in this moment?
Well, as I mentioned a little earlier, my life wouldn't be nearly as rich without Johnny. Now, I've got four beautiful daughters and 10 grandchildren, and my life has been a rich life, no question about that. But the very pinnacle of my happiness is got to be Johnny. So somebody that has a child with special needs, and there are a lot of different special needs, I understand that, but if we can just show them the love that they show us, unconditional love, you know, and it's hard for us to do that from time to time, but yet that child shows us that, we're going to end up being better people as a result of having that child. I know it's going to live forever. I just think they're extremely blessed and don't know it.
Well, thank you, Coach. Do give Ruth Ann and the rest of the family our regards, will you?
Before I leave, let me say this from just a guy in Texas. Boy, do we appreciate what you do, Dr. Dobson. You have influenced literally millions of people, and thank you for your influence.
Blessings to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Oh, what a powerful program we've just heard, Dr. Meeker. You can tell that Gene Stallings just absolutely loved his son, Johnny. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone could have listened to that broadcast without getting a little choked up.
No, it really was, Ryan. And as we were listening to the program, I couldn't help but think of all the babies who are aborted because they might have Down syndrome or another disability. Think about what a difference Johnny Stallings made, not only on his family, but on everyone around him. Yep. If the Stallings had decided to kill him before he was born, they would have missed out on a lifetime of memories.
You're absolutely right, Dr. Meeker. In fact, I was just going through a bunch of photos to include in my new book, and one of Lincoln's best friends has Down syndrome, and I found pictures of them, and I just thought, you know, people are aborting these babies left and right, and they just bring so much joy.
They do.
So, to our listeners, you've been listening to a classic broadcast here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and I'm here with my co-host and our physician-in-residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And if you'd like more information about Gene Stallings and his son Johnny or the Ministry of Family Talk, call us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website at drjamesdobson.org.
And when you contact us, please consider making a donation to help us maximize the matching grant that we currently have in play right now. As I've mentioned many times before, Dr. Dobson has made a huge impact on my life and family.
Yeah.
I remember as a young mom listening to him on the radio, and when the program was over, I would literally go and do whatever it was that he told me just to do. He taught me how to be a good mom and a wife, and I owe him personally so much, and I owe this ministry so much too. Right now, you have the opportunity to share in that impact by supporting Dr. Dobson and the work of Family Talk. Because of the match, every dollar you commit to us this month immediately doubles, increasing our ability to help millions of people become better moms and dads and wives and husbands. Would you please give today? You can donate by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org, or by calling us at 877-732-6825.
You can also donate on Facebook or our Family Talk smartphone app. We appreciate you being here, and we appreciate your support, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.